This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, horse people. This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida, and you're listening to the Horses in the Morning Show on the Horse Radio Network for September 18th, 2012, episode 490. Horses in the Morning is live Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the summer, so today we're bringing you a highlight podcast from the Horse Radio Network. Sit back and enjoy episode 172 of the Dressage Radio Show as Reese and Philip visit with para coach Roz Kistler and Jenny Carroll about the National Pony Cup. And to end our audio ride through equestrianism, Olympic bronze and Pan American gold medalist Gina Smith offers advice on proper warm-ups. Horses in the Morning will be back live tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern, replete with riotous reports regarding all things equine. And for you true history geeks out there, born on this day in the year 57, Roman Emperor Trajan, known to his friends and family as Marcus Ulpius Nerva Tranius Augustus.
This is Reese Koffler Stanfield from Georgetown, Kentucky.
And this is Philip Parks from Fergus, Ontario, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show. With us today is Glenn, our producer.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Glenn.
Good to talk to you again this week.
As always, same for you guys.
Hopefully it's been a good week for everyone.
Yeah, we had a great week. We had a horse show over the weekend, and we're going to talk with Jenny Carroll a little bit later about the Pony Cup that happened at the horse show where I was at the horse park. But we had a great show, really great.
Well, that's nice. I've heard of this Pony Cup thing, but I don't know anything about it. I teach a couple of ponies, but it'll be interesting to hear about this big pony show. That's I guess it's getting bigger and bigger too.
It is, and I will tell you, they had great prizes. So my pony is going again next year.
Well, in dressage in Europe, you know, the pony classes and the pony riders, it's huge. I mean, maybe not as big as the horse sport, but I mean, they've got all kinds of warm blood ponies out there, and I mean, you can really get into it if you want to.
Yeah, and I think ponies actually add a great option for adult amateurs. We have a wonderful pony in our barn. She's a Connemara, and she was a driving pony, so she understands sort of the frame and how she's supposed to go, and she's pretty darn fancy, but she's fun for an amateur to ride. And she's been a great resource for moms that want to ride and have a horse themselves, but also have a horse that's good enough for their kids. So I think it's a really good option to look for a lot of people, and they can usually do both roles.
She looks kind of funny, Philip, in the dressage ring, though, with the blinders on.
You're silly, Glenn.
I'm not sure that's allowed.
Glenn, you're silly. Yeah. So, Philip, how was your week?
It was good. Also, coaching at a show this weekend. It was rainy and mucky and not so much fun, but the riders all did really well, and the horses dealt with the footing and all that really well. So, in the end, had a good show, and we'll continue on with the weather that we have and the warm weather that we have left up here. You know, we're looking at 1 or 2 months before the snow comes in, that S word I don't like to say.
Yeah, I'll be thinking about you. Glenn and I will be thinking about you from the Sunshine State. That's all
I gotta
say.
Yeah. Okay. Floridians, right?
So I have to ask you a question, Philip. I want your take on this. We also had some pretty bad weather come through on Saturday morning at the horse show. How do you feel about scratching and bad weather and bad footing?
Well, it's all down to kind of, you know, how good the footing is and the horse, you know. I mean, I'm not one that just scratches on principle, you know, and I think even if the warm-up is a little bit okay, or, you know, at this show they designated a grass warm-up area. So I said to some of my riders, go and warm up. If you feel terrible, then we'll scratch. Or if you go into the ring and you go around, and or at any point in the test you don't feel like you're confident about the footing, then then scratch at that point, you know. It's you know, you bring the horses to the show, you know, in this case we were only there one day. You know, kind of give it a shot. I mean, at most shows they allow for boots and bandages and bad footings. So, you know, that's the bonus. We boot them up. We bandage them as much as possible.
That must be a Canadian rule, because that doesn't
happen. Yeah, I was going to say that.
Yeah, that's not, well, that stewards, doesn't happen here.
The stewards, you know, you talk to the stewards and the judges and they are okay with it. I mean, I've had it happen at, let's see, 3 shows this year where the footing was a little dicey and they said, oh, bandage is fine. So,
That's good. That would change my opinion a lot of times. I kind of feel the same way, but I have to say our footing was really bad. It was really and the storm came through right at 8 o'clock. Actually, 7:50 was, because I was walking to the arena on my horse, and we were able to scoot in one of the barns at the horse park, and then they went on a 1 hour delay. But I have to be honest, I am always a little cautious, especially if the horses have qualified and sort of reached their goal for the year. I did scratch my horses, and it was beautiful weather at the end of the day, of course, after they were supposed to be ridden. And so I rode them later in the day, but they had the next day, and you know, both of them did well schooling. So, but I always think, I always like to ask trainers. I think it's always a question for different people. What do you do in bad weather? Because I think it's worth thinking about for sure.
Oh yeah, I mean, and like I said, horse by horse, some horses just really are not confident in that kind of footing, and then it's not worth it, sort of thing. Or, you know, if there's huge puddles in the ring or the ring's underwater, then I mean, what's the point? You know, but. Yeah, I guess it's just on a, you know, on a situational basis.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I just was curious on what you guys do. So,
well, on the bad weather front, I don't mean to bring the show down here, but I want to give our best. I won't name names here, but we live in an equestrian community down here in Florida, and we, you know, in Florida, we get storms every day. 3 o'clock, it's storm time, and the first thunderbolt hits, and you know, the next hour, it's storming and raining and pouring like cats and dogs. But unfortunately, I heard that there was a dressage horse here in the neighborhood that was killed by lightning last week, about 2 streets over from us. So, you know, that's the, and it's, you know, that always brings up the old discussion that we all have is, you know, are they safer in the barn or outside during storms, you know? You know, getting hit by lightning is not something that happens often, but, boy, it does happen.
That's and it horrible. Does. In Kentucky, it actually, lightning is a really big issue here. We have to be very, very careful with storms. Glenn, you remember, you know, what they're like here. And they will call shows if the first bolt of lightning, they don't mess around up here. And actually, I was struck by lightning when I was younger. I was running out to the barn. Yeah, I was running out to my barn to close the barn doors. Now I don't do that. And it struck right above my head. And I was touching the metal doors, and I got blown backwards, and
Holy cow, I didn't know that.
little factoid. Yep, and I had a whole swollen mouth, and you know, my dad's a physician, so he called his friend. You know, what do you do? But apparently, when you get struck by lightning, your electrolytes kind of go crazy. So they monitored me, and I was okay. You know, now you know if I'm a little crazy,
that's why she's so high energy, Philip.
Yeah, exactly.
She got a little extra electricity to her personality.
Exactly. Now you all know. But no, I'm actually really terrified of lightning. So I will leave them exactly where they are, and I am in the house. I don't care. You know, at that point, I'm out of there.
Yeah. I mean, that could be scary. I mean, you don't horse show or do anything, really. I mean, with lightning around, that's a scary thing.
I got to tell you, though, my wife, being a horse person, you know, has always been a little lax about, you know, walking around the middle of thunderstorms and lightning and everything. She's always been very lax about it. And yet her brother has been hit by lightning a couple times because he was a Green Beret and he was the radio guy. So he had the antenna and he got hit a couple of times when he was over in the war, actually, over in Afghanistan. And yet she's always been very careless about it. Now, since we moved to Florida, for some reason she's gotten more careful because for some reason the storms just seem wicked down here. But, something to think about. Don't play in the lightning.
No, don't.
Yeah.
Very dangerous.
Yeah, but we have a great show today.
Who else is on the show?
We have Roz Kinsler. She was a trainer at the Para Dressage Games in London, and she has a wonderful story on her and her rider. And we also have Gina Smith doing our trainer tip.
Yeah, she's a Canadian rider, Grand Prix rider, Olympian herself, and was the chef d'équipe at London. But we'll be talking about a trainer tip and see what she's got for us today.
I think it sounds great. And this week there wasn't a lot going on in the news. There were some horse shows in Europe, but there was an interesting article that came out in the Chronicle of the Horse by Anne Gribbins. The Olympics were everything we feared, which was an interesting article. Philip, did you get a chance to read it?
I did, actually. And it was you know, like you said, interesting and a great perspective on how to improve things in the U.S. I think, you know, in the U.S., a lot of things apply to Canada, too. I mean, being, you know, neighbors. And Anne was talking about needing to get out, getting the horses and the competitors out to Europe to compete against the Europeans, you know, before you jump into the Olympics, or, you know, to have an idea about, you know, how you look on the world stage. I mean, Europe is still that place to go, right? And she's supporting that idea. And further depth in the U.S. team.
Yeah, and money, and how we get the funding, because I think she made a great point, and a lot of the riders in England and in Europe, all they have to do is ride. They don't have to ride and teach and clinic and sell horses and, you know, to make a living. And I think a lot of riders in North America have to do that, and that really does take away your ability to prepare, your ability to take time on your fitness, your mental fitness. So I thought that was an interesting concept, is we do need more funding. And I think that's right. So,
you know,
it's a good article.
When this article, we've discussed it in a couple of the other shows too, because it's caused some conversation for sure. And I think that has to be so frustrating, being a professional rider, reading this article and going, okay, this is all great, but how do I do it? You know, how do I make a living, go over there for months and months and months and months, and not be able to teach my lessons and do and run my business and do my barn and all of that, and still be able to accomplish all of this with the limited funding that we do have? It's difficult. It's got to be frustrating.
It is. I would say when I was competing Casper internationally, that was the hardest part. And I had help. I had help from my family. I had help from people in my area. And that was great, but there's a tremendous amount of stress, and it wasn't enough. You know, there still were things that I would have liked to have done, but I just didn't have the funding, and it's very, very hard. And I think the hardest thing, unless you have a big time sponsor that is just paying your salary and paying for everything, it's something we all have to work on.
And you have to hope, too, when you're looking at the business side of it, you have to hope that by the time you get home, you know, after being gone for months, that your clients are still there. They've obviously gotten training from somebody in the meantime. So you have that worry, too, that you're going to have your business when you get home, that it's going to be there. It's tough.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very hard. And if you, when you are gone, you have to fly home. So when you fly home to teach your riders at home, then somebody has to be there with your horses wherever they are and keeping them fit, and It is very, very difficult without everything being paid for. And even then, there's plenty of challenges.
Yeah, on a smaller scale, even, you know, for a lot of riders going to Florida, where, you know, the winter competition series is, I mean, you're facing some of the same things, and it's not even as far as going to Europe. So I just... I don't know, you know, without tremendous personal wealth, how it's going to happen.
Yeah, no, it's the same. I think we all face that. So my clients are great. And I hope that everyone can do that. And that is, I need to go away for a couple months to work on myself. And most of my clients are really good about it. And I do fly home to do clinics every couple weeks to check on everybody. Yeah, it's challenging. So I'd like to introduce Roz Kinsler, trainer for Dale Derrick at the Paralympic Equestrian Games in 2012. Roz, welcome to the Dressage Radio Show. Thanks so much for coming on.
Oh, thank you very much. It's certainly my pleasure.
Well, we are all looking forward to hearing all about your experience at the Paralympic Games in London. So tell us about it.
Well, it was certainly truly the experience of a lifetime, and nothing that we ever thought we'd be doing. You know, Dale and I, when we started this whole thing 15 months ago, the whole point was to see, quite literally, could Dale survive a horse show? And, you know, she has many physical issues. And so we did the first show, and then she saw something about Para online and said, well, let's try that. So we did. Went to Saugerties, and nobody knew who the heck we were. Went to our first national championship in 2011, and she wound up reserve champion. So that was, like, kind of fun. Wow. And we just kept going. Yeah, it was amazing. And, you know, we went down to Florida. She, you know, rode in the CPEDIs down there. And this whole team thing kind of took on a life of its own, and it was just wild to follow it. It was really, really fun. The horse is a great little horse, and Dale had ridden quite a bit, you know, before she has lupus, ongoing lupus, and then there's all kinds of associated issues, but had quit riding for a while. So like I said, at least I didn't have to make up all the basics for her, and that was great. But the whole experience of flying the horse and, you know, and getting there and being on the venue, it was just really amazing, amazing, amazing. Very fun.
Roz, can you tell us a little bit more about your rider, what level that she rides at, and how maybe your relationship with her started and how long you've been working together?
Sure. Dale is a grade 2 rider, and, you know, if you understand the grades, there are 5 para grades. There are 2 grades within grade 1. That's the most severely disabled. And 2, grade 2 would be approximately second level, but they don't canter in their tests. And then 3, it's the second level plus, and grade 4 is right a third level plus. Dale has been riding with me for about 4 years. She had ridden, I want to say, close to 20 years ago at the Grand Prix level. She rode in one of the last Olympic festivals, but her lupus really sidelined her. And when she came to me 4 years ago, she hadn't been riding at all. You know, this was just truly to just see if she could still do it. She had a cute little mare, but was not really the right match for her. So we placed that horse and found this one in our backyard, truly by accident. And he just seemed to be very appropriate. We worked together 5 days a week, you know, and in coaching her, I mean, the biggest thing, my biggest takeaway from this whole thing is I teach her like I do all my other students, and I've been teaching a long time. The only thing that varies with our routine is usually I'll warm the horse up for her so he's ready to go, but then she's ready to take the reins and continue on. And, you know, I would ask her, and I do this every day when she rides, to ride. Nothing is patronizing is what I'm trying to say. I expect the same level of performance from her as I do anybody. I just have to be careful of her endurance level. But that's it. Nothing else. And over time, you know, her gift to me, and I do have another para rider too, is I really don't see the handicap. She's just another one of our group, another horse in training, and a serious competitor.
So, Roz, tell us a little bit about what happened. You got the horse ready, you flew to England, and what? Take us from there.
Oh, okay. Well, we went to Gladstone for a training camp right before we left in the beginning of August, and it got the team kind of galvanized. Then we flew over to England. Let's see the dates. We had a week's worth in Jersey, and then we flew to England, stayed at a place in Surrey, England, for about a week, right near the Epsom Racecourse, so that was very fun. Gave the horses a chance to rest up from the flight, and we could train very seriously there before the venue actually opened up. Then we shipped over to the venue itself and set up shop there. We had a little bump in the road, a rule change that we hadn't known about in this country. We've been competing normally for the grade one, both ones and twos. The trainer's allowed to ride the horse on a loose rein, and then you're allowed 30 minutes stewarded once a day, and that's how our whole show plan is prepared. Well, when we got there, it turns out the trainers were only allowed on the horse's back, regardless, loose rein or on, you know, working, for 30 minutes. Well, that was a big change in our program. It meant very limited exercise time in a way for the horse. So when we got on site, I added to his program is a little bit of lunging, because these horses weren't turned out at all. You know, it's quite a bit different for them. And all four of them were great to adjust to it. But it did take a little twist in training. But they certainly rose to the occasion. But that was kind of a surprise at the last minute.
Yeah, sure.
Very different. Well, the other little rule, too, that makes that trickier is that, and they still leave this, is the trainer has to be off the horse's back, ready or not, 15 minutes prior to the rider's time. So it was a little bit of a difference in timing. But, you know, obviously we made it work.
And what was the whole Paralympics experience like? Were you able to go out and see some other events, or were you just focused on the riding, or what was that like?
Well, I had the advantage of staying in the village, and that was amazing. You know, it was just an amazing experience. We lived sort of in a dormitory. It was like being back in school. But to give you an idea, there was a huge dining hall there where everybody came and went, all different kinds of food. But my hobby at night is to see, all right, what new country was here? I mean, I saw, like, Rwanda had people there, the Congo, every Asian country, even Vietnam. And that was astounding to see. It was really quite exciting. Because of the equestrian venue was not, it was about a 20-minute bus ride, and we wanted to be there for our team members. There really wasn't enough time for us to see other events. Some of the other team members stayed on longer so they could go visit, you know, and do that. But, you know, with four people riding, and we certainly all wanted to be there for one another, we didn't really have the free time I expected to. But it was a very cool thing they did. They have a welcome ceremony for every country, which is not part of the opening ceremonies. And we were paired with Costa Rica and the Congo, that they, you know, each country is introduced, and there's a delegate from each country's group of athletes that presented a gift. And that also was a great experience. They had a little performance arranged. They played the country's anthem. And our representative, for example, I'd never met her, just walked up on stage and handed a gift, and she came back, and I asked Missy, actually, who she was, and she explained that she's a runner. She's a double amputee. I had no idea, none. And that also was fabulous. People who, and many people I saw were severely disabled, but they were serious athletes, and I was quite impressed with it. It was just exciting to be there among everybody who, you know, they were there for a purpose and they were on a mission. And you couldn't help but be infected with it, if you will.
And Roz, how did Dale do?
Dale did great. First day, she was a little nervous, to say the least, and the horse was a little nervous. And she had, unfortunately, the bad luck to be like the fourth rider in. But, you know, she did okay and recovered from her mistakes. And it was fine. And we competed every other day, which was kind of odd when you're used to horse showing. But it was also nice. It took a little pressure off. Second test, she improved by 5 percentage points. And when we got to the freestyle, which was her last test, honestly, she never rode it better than that. She was spot on and got a nice big score, got a 69-plus percent, and was on top of the leaderboard for half the class, which was truly a thrill. I took pictures of the scoreboard. I was so excited to see it. And then Becca came along, and she beat her, and we had USA up on the top for quite a while, which was just fabulous.
Now, Roz, and can you tell us what you can take away from, you know, going to that competition, and maybe what the U.S. has to do going on from here?
Well, there were two things that really impressed me, because as a trainer, I had never seen any other para athletes other than ours. And we have good riders. I mean, don't mistake me, you know what I'm saying, but the quality of horses blew me away. It was they were no different than what we see in our able body. They were fabulous horses, and they have to have exceptional character, no doubt. But what I expected to see were nice medium horses with good training. And I saw way more than that. So that was really quite impressive. I thought our riding skills as a team were right on the mark. But I think we need more European experience, to be perfectly honest. You need to get into the deep end with everybody to improve your game. And, you know, the underlying thing to me, just inspirational thing, is it's something I believe personally myself for my whole career, you can pretty much do whatever you want if you're willing to work for it. I mean, there's a grade two rider that Dale rode against, for example, a German woman who had no legs and missing fingers on her hand. And she rode a hot, strong horse with big gaits, not a problem. You know, she would have, and that was tremendous to see. So I think in this country, we need to think of our athletes that way. They need to be appropriately mounted in horse character, but they also need to be really good horses, which is, you know, from a trainer point of view, it means you can really train and really teach, which is very, very fun.
Well, Roz, thank you so much for coming on and telling us about your journey to London and Dale's as well. And congratulations to you both. And we can't wait to see you in Rio.
Well, I'll tell you what, we are really excited. Normandy first, we hope. And then from there, we'll see.
Well, next up, we have Jenny Carroll, organizer of the National Pony Cup. And that'll be right after this word from Kentucky Performance Products.
Joint Armor from KPP provides your horse with the building blocks necessary to maintain healthy joints throughout his lifetime. Kentucky Performance Products Quality Assurance provides you with the confidence that you are purchasing a safe, high-quality product. Your satisfaction is guaranteed. Joint Armor is concentrated and affordable. One jar lasts a whole 75 days. Joint Armor helps maintain fluid motion and flexibility in your horse's joints. It also supports normal cartilage development and reduces joint deterioration. Learn more about Joint Armor from Kentucky Performance Products and all their other terrific products at kppusa.com. That's kppusa.com.
Hi, Jenny. Welcome to the Dressage Radio Show. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Well, thank you for letting me come and speak with you this evening.
So, Jenny, I met you over the weekend at the National Pony Cup that happened at in conjunction with the Mid-South Eventing and Dressage Association Annual Horse Show. And tell us about the Pony Cup.
Well, the show is called the National Dressage Pony Cup as its formal name. And it began as an idea between a friend of mine and myself when we had gone to the East Coast Pony Cup up in Saugerties, New York. London Gray has a show that is for ponies only in dressage in conjunction with a show up in Saugerties in the fall, I believe. And this was maybe 7 years ago. And after we went to that show, my friend and I, Donna Cook, were sitting around eating dinner, and we said, you know, we could probably have a show like that in the Midwest. I bet we could draw a lot of ponies from our area and some even from further away, we hoped, because it was a more centralized location than on the East Coast. And we thought that ponies deserved an opportunity to perform in dressage and be able to compete pony against pony versus being in classes with horses all the time where they may not have as much of an advantage to show what they can do. So we started at Paxton Farm and we had the first show there and it was a success. We had maybe 50 ponies that came, some from Kansas and some from North Carolina, and we had people from Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio, obviously, and we had maybe 10 breeds represented at that first show. So we just continued on year after year. We had to move the show from one venue to the next because of either closed, when Paxton Farms closed, and then we went to Roberts Arena for a couple of years, and then we finally now found a hopefully permanent home with the Mid-South Eventing and Dressage Association show down at the Horse Park. So the Pony Cup now is in its sixth year. And this past Saturday and Sunday, we had maybe, I think, 15 or 16 different breeds represented. And they competed from intro through FEI level. And we gave out many beautiful awards and prizes, and I think everybody had a very good time.
So, what is the highest level that was competed in this past weekend?
This past weekend, there were two ponies that competed in Pre-St. George. In past seasons, we've had ponies competing in Grand Prix and in I-1. I don't think we had any I-2 competition over the past few years, but one rider who came from Georgia actually got her gold medal on her pony when she did her Grand Prix test, and we've had many people receive their bronze or their silver medals, depending on the rides that they had at the Pony Cup. And all of the classes count towards year-end awards and breed awards, and it's a rated show, and it's sort of a show within a show. So not only do the competitors get to see other ponies and compete against other ponies, but a lot of people who have horses and who might not see the ponies so often competing in dressage and may not even realize how well they can do, or that there are so many adults who ride ponies and who can enjoy that just as much as they can riding a very large horse. It just maybe opens people's eyes to other possibilities.
And Jenny, what was the most common breed that competed at the Pony Cup?
Well, I think this time it was halflingers, I would have to say. We've had a number of them every year competing in dressage, anywhere from intro. The highest level, I think, competed at third level this time. And we've had other breeds in great numbers some years. We had a group of fell ponies that came one year. There were maybe about 8 of them that came. We had a number of fjords who came. So certain times, we'll have a great number of one breed or another represented. We even had an Icelandic pony one year, which was very interesting. It had a lot of people sort of watching and waiting to see what was going to happen when that pony started trotting. And it did a very respectable, I think it was a training level test. So it was a lot of fun to watch.
And what kind of response do you get from the competitors? Do you have them coming back year after year? I mean, I can see if you're a pony breeder, this being, a great date to set on your calendar each day. So has it been growing and growing?
Yeah, I actually think we've had quite a few breeders come. I think the people who come and compete are always very excited that they have a place to show their ponies and, I think, show them to their best advantage and maybe feel like they are, more appreciated than they might be at, some other shows that they might go to where they may be the only pony there. I think they feel a great deal of camaraderie. There's maybe a dozen competitors that I've seen come back year after year after year after year. And they'll keep in touch with me by email, or maybe I see them at some shows, in our area over the course of the year. And I think they all look forward to coming back every year.
And Jenny, I actually have a pony in the barn. So how would we get involved with the program?
Well, the thing is that, you just register when the MSEDA show has its prize list up. The Pony Cup is always going to be part of that. There's pony classes listed in that. We have a website, the National Dressage Pony Cup, that lists all of the ways that you can sponsor or where you can see all the rules about measurements. Ponies all have to be measured before they go into the Pony Cup. So we have measurement forms that you can download and have prepared. And you can certainly contact me. My email address is listed on the website, as well as my cell phone number in case somebody would like to contact me and ask about the Pony Cup or what they might be able to do. But, primarily it's letting people know in their breed registries, pony breed registries, that this show exists, and for them to put it on their calendar and make it, part of their yearly schedule.
So, Jenny, thank you so much for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, and I hope you bring your pony to the next Pony Cup.
Oh, I am going to. You gave out the best ribbons. Oh, they were so cute. They were like pony heads. Oh, they were the best. Oh, they were so cute.
Are you going to ride it, Reese?
Well, unfortunately, she just got sold. But yes, I will. I will make sure she comes next year. Okay. And Jenny, can you tell us the website one more time where we can find more information?
It's nationaldressageponycup.com.
Right after this commercial from Equestrian Collections, we have our trainer tip. Gina Smith is going to talk to us about a warm-up pattern.
Hi, Glenn, back with you from the Horse Radio Network. I'm here with Debbie with the Equestrian Collections Product of the Week.
This week we're talking about the Equestrian Collections Savvy Shopper email newsletter. Here at Equestrian Collections, we send out a newsletter twice a month with interesting information and really good information from our vets and people around the globe that have good information for your horse and yourself. For instance, one of our employees was involved in the fire in Colorado, and she sent out information on how to prepare for evacuation. So there's all kinds of really pertinent information that we send out in our newsletter. That's twice a month. And every Friday, we send out a sales flyer, so our savvy shoppers get all the updated information about the sales that we have on our website. In order to sign up for Savvy Shopper, you just go to the website, and on the front page, on the home page, down there about halfway down, it says sign up for exclusive emails. Now, when you sign up, don't worry about, we do not sell your emails. We don't do anything except for send out this information to you, to the email that you give us. And it's very easy if you move or anything and you want to change your email address, you can just reply to that and we can take care of it for you. But it has lots of the vet. We have a vet on call that actually writes for us. The one where our employee was involved with the fires in Colorado, it had a companion piece from the vet on what to do about burns. So it's just really pertinent information and that we would like for our customers to have at the tip of their fingers. And I want to also mention that on our website, under our help button, you'll have a whole list on the right-hand side of all the older ones that the vet has done and that we've had on there. So if you have a question on, for instance, how hot is too hot to ride, how cold is too cold to ride, what to do about overheating horses, anything like that, it's all right there at your fingertips anytime you want it at www.equestriancollections.com.
Hi, Gina. Thanks for coming on the show to do our trainer tip today.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
So, we're all waiting. What is your advice for our riders and listeners?
Well, when I first start out with any rider, I really like to make sure that they have a plan for the day. And generally, they're really a little bit sort of not really thinking about what they're going to be doing or how they're going to approach it. And it's such an important part of the daily training to have a really good warm-up. So I really impress on my riders that they go through a warm-up pattern. And I give them a basic pattern to ride. And then always I tell them that it can change depending on the horse. If you have a little more excitable horse or one that's a little fresh, or if you have a lazy horse. So it can change up a little bit, but there is a basic plan that I like them to get started with. So first of all, of course, we just get on a walk around and walk straight around the outside of the arena and really try to get a nice, good forward walk on a loose rein. If the horse is a little bit looking around at stuff, then you want to keep him a little bit more in your contact that you've got something there in case he does have a big spook or something. But generally, they're working at home, so They're familiar with their surroundings. And straight lines, I think, is really important, really encouraging the horse to walk forward both directions of the arena so they have a good look at everything from both ways. Long diagonal lines to change the direction. And then we pick up the reins a little bit and get them nicely forward into a good working trot. And I like, again, if it's at all possible with the horse and how they're behaving, to go in straight lines around the outside of the arena. I like to keep them on the inside track to be sure that the riders are riding both sides of their horses. They're not just sticking on the walls, that they can keep slightly away from the track on the long sides as well as on the short end. So we go around the arena both directions, straight lines, changing the arena along a long diagonal, just encouraging the horses to really come forward and get loosened up and get a little warmed up. After they've done around each direction, then we start on the circle lines. And it's the large 20-meter circles. In a large arena, 20 by 60 arena, you'd have three circles, and that would be one at either end and one in the middle of the arena, just really stressing that the horses now start to keep the same rhythm on those big circles that they do on the straighter lines. And as we're getting going into the warm-up with some nice working trot forward, it's important that they stay really forward, and it's important that the horses start to learn to just stretch down and use their backs and really start working their range of motion. The direction is then changed, and we do the three big 20-meter circles in the other direction, making sure that the horse is going to be evenly warmed up on both sides. So every horse has one side that's a little more difficult than the other, so we want to make sure we get them as even as possible into both reins and really listening into both legs. Again, the circles will be done slightly on the inside track, so I would say if it's a 20-meter arena, they're probably 18, 19-meter circles. Again, the long diagonals to change the direction. After these three circles in each direction, so six circles that you've done completed, we have a big circle at one end of the arena, and through sitting trot, transition to canter. And same thing in the canter. We do the three 20-meter circles. Depending on the horse, if it's a very green young horse, usually you would bring it back to trot after you've finished a third circle on a circle line. If it's a little more advanced along, we would change the rein across the diagonal at canter, send them nicely forward, and close to the end, the transition to trot, riding onto a big circle in the new direction, and then again making the horse asking the horse for a canter transition, and doing your three circles the other direction, so a big circle at either end and one in the middle. Depending on the horse, you would ride maybe more circles one way than the other, depending on their stiffer side, trying to get them to relax and stretch down and really use their backs. Again, after the three circles on that direction, you would change the rein across the diagonal. At the end of the diagonal line, a rising trot and a serpentine. And generally, we would do a three-loop serpentine, really nice suppling bend changes, so you've worked on your horse's rhythm. You're working on the suppleness now, the direction changes, and you're getting the horses to really listen to your aids. It's a great warm-up for the rider. The rider has to go over their own aids. They're changing from one side to the other. Again, just really keeping up a nice forward rhythm, getting the horses forward from the inside leg to the outside rein, so you're developing your contact. I would do probably two three-loop serpentines, and depending on the horse, possibly a four-loop serpentine, which is also beneficial for a little more suppleness. And then through sitting trot on a straight line down the long side, transition to walk and sort of a half-long rein, again, giving them a little breather. And that is really a basic warm-up pattern that I like to see the riders do. We do that with younger horses as well as with the older, more advanced horses. And I think that's just a great pattern to follow. We can add circles if you need to. You can take circles away if you have a bit of a lazier horse. You want to get them really forward in a straighter line. You just omit one of the circles, maybe the middle circle. You just keep going from one end to the other. Try to send them on down the long side a little bit more to just get them really in front of the leg. Also, with some of the older horses, they're in that warm-up phase. They're ready to do a little bit of changes of tempo. So you can ask for a little more trot, a little bit steadier trot. Just you work a little bit more towards your rideability of your horse and make sure that he's really listening to you for the next session that you'd like to get into. So I really find it's a great pattern. I can walk into my arena every day when I come in to see my students, and I know exactly where they're going, what they're doing. I know how far along they are in their pattern, in their warm-up, and everybody will be able to ride together a lot easier. They sort of know what the other rider is going, where they have a plan. They just know the program. So once you get into that program, it's very, very easy and to get the horses nicely warmed up and going, and everybody can just have a good flow going, working together.
Now, Gina, do you do the same also when you're at a competition?
I try to do the same at a competition, of course. It's always a little bit trickier. You have to really, really watch for the other riders. Of course, not all the riders know my plan, so if you have your own plan, you can adjust it. You can always say, okay, I'm banking a big circle. Oh, but there's some riders over there, so I'll do a direction change. So you're very flexible, but you still have your basic plan in the back of your mind. It's always worked for me. I see my students when they get to competition that they know the basic plan, they have a good warm-up, and if something does come into their way, they can say, okay, I can just keep flowing, keep going. The main thing is to be able to keep a good flow in your warm-up that the horse can really get forward to your aids.
Now, Gina, I've seen some riding at your place, and I know some of your students and that kind of thing. Something that strikes me as important and something that I took into my riding a little bit, and you touched on it briefly, but maybe you can talk about it a little bit more, is riding off of the track or off of the wall a little bit. I think for me, that's really helped a lot of horses. And maybe you want to just reiterate that point and why you do it and what you're looking for a little bit.
Yeah. Riding on the inside track is just something that I can't stress enough. And I've constantly saying it to my riders. They seem to want to gravitate towards the wall. The horses like to sort of hug the walls, and they find a little security with the balance there. And if you ride off the wall or ask your riders to go off the wall, suddenly they're like serpentining and swerving down the long side, and they can't keep them straight. And it's one of the steps of the training scale is straightness. And not to say that you're, you know, even if it is one of the last steps of the training, you're still working on it when you're doing some basic exercises. So the wall tends to do a lot of the riding sometimes, I find. And if you have your riders come off the track, they really see how little they're using their outside aids, their outside leg and their outside rein. So to be able to ride the horses more forward, it keeps them straighter. The riders will become better in a forward manner. And they'll become also, when you get to an outdoor ring or in your competitions where you don't have that indoor arena wall, they'll be much, much easier to keep the horses where they want to go. They won't be sort of drifting left and right. They'll really have the horses accessed on both sides, in both legs, both reins, much better. And it's a constant thing. I keep having to tell people to get away from the track, ride on the inside track.
So, Gina, typically, how long does your warm-up plan last?
I would say between 12, 15 minutes. That's usually what it is.
And are there days where you just kind of stay in the warm-up phase, or do you always kind of progress?
No, there are some days when I say, let's just ride two warm-up patterns. And so you'd ride it, have a little walk break, and then ride it again. And maybe in the second pattern, you would ask for a little more tempo changes, like you just work towards a bigger trot, a little steadier trot, maybe make some smaller circles, add some smaller circles, but really encouraging horses to stretch. So it's not always every day that you work them fully through any routine. Certainly the young horses, the 4 and 5 year olds, can have, you know, a day when it's just a single warm-up pattern and then go hacking. It's always something that I really like to make sure that they've done, that they've checked out every day, that they've got their aids working well and the horses are listening. But yeah, for sure, you can just do like two warm-up patterns and then be done.
Wonderful. Thank you, Gina, so much for your trainer tip and your expertise. Where can people find you on the web?
I have a website. It's franklandsfarm.com. And you can find me on there. Our email address is on there. And I welcome anybody to come and look at the site. It's a beautiful property that I have here that owned by Faith Burkhuis that I get to work on, and it's a lovely place. So I'm very lucky.
Philip, I am super excited to try that warm-up plan tomorrow. Denali, here we come. We are doing we're doing it. I can't wait to report next week.
I think it really helps young horses, especially because, you know, when they're a little bit excited, You got a plan, right? So I think that's what Gina was talking about, having a plan and using it to get them relaxed day in and day out.
Yeah, I think it was great. And doing it in a competition so everybody knows what's coming and what you need to do, I think it's great. So That was fun, and I look forward to doing it. And everyone is riding off the wall tomorrow. That's my new thing.
That is harder than it seems, I think, for a lot of riders, but it's a good challenge.
It is. So you can find our show notes and links to today's guests on our website at dressageradio.com. Like us on Facebook. Just search for the Dressage Radio Show. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com, and my email is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
You can find me at philipparksequestrian.com, and my email is philip@horseradionetwork.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Equestrian Collections and Kentucky Performance Products. And don't forget to check out all the other great shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
Everybody, keep your heels down and your shoulders back, and we will talk to you next week.